Study course. So basically how it's functioning is that the academy's study, you know, for the Gita and these connected literatures is actually a 3-year course. Okay. That's the same as what this is. Okay. Do you need this stuff? It's the same thing here. So, the first year is what is, would be, you know how you say it, classically called the Bhakti Shastri course. So that's a chronological study of the Bhagavad Gita, Nectar of Devotion, Ishopanishad, Upadeshamrita. So you're studying basically the Upanishadic philosophy. Because Gita is the essence of the Upanishads, Ishopanishads considered the foremost of the Upanishads. And then you're studying the science of devotional service in Nectar Devotion and Upadeshamrita. So Nectar Devotion is the book that defines devotional service. Right? And Bhagavad Gita and Ishopanishad, they define your fundamental philosophy. Right? So basically, anything else will be based on this. Right? It's not that, okay, well, there's some other books. No, it's based on this. It's just expanding. All the works of the Acharyas and that, they are, expansions of Nectar Devotion when they're giving their definitions of the devotional process. It's not something else. They're just taking like a verse from there or a concept from there. And then writing a whole work on that. So, this is your fundamental. But it's a chronological study, starting the beginning of the work and going to the end. Right? So that's what's done in the first year. And if you understand this nicely, see the connections nicely, then you'll have a good, solid foundation in Krishna conscious philosophy. The second year, then, that is analysis of these same scriptures. Because Prabhupada says in studying that there's two aspects. You read the book and you study the book. So reading means you start from the beginning and you go to the end. Study means you see the connecting points that go throughout the work. Right? There are certain points that are being made, certain themes that are being made. Right? And so these have to be studied. Right? So, like you see, in a work, because you're introducing a subject, you'll give the basic elements of the subject in the opening. Then you'll start to deepen on those, you know, one after another, or all together. But in any case, you go, and then you'll take something more and more. Till at the end of the work, then you understand what is being discussed. Right? Now, what's being discussed at the end and what's being discussed at the beginning are the same thing, just it's in a more developed stage. So that means that the points that are being made there have been developed through the work. So the analysis of it means taking those themes and seeing how they're developed in the work. What is the fundamental point of that particular theme? What's its, you know, expansion? What's its conclusion? Does it make sense? So that's why it's a different study. Right? So then, that's what will be in the second year. So the second year is the analysis of Bhagavad Gita. This analysis was written by Srila Prabhupada in the 50s. It's very little known. Devotees may have seen it here and there. It comes up in the Vyasa Puja book occasionally. But most haven't seen it. It's there on the in the folio, but most don't notice it. But his actual analyzation of the Bhagavad Gita, the Upanishadic format, and is broken up into the parts like is being broken up in the Vedanta Sutra. Because the Vedanta Sutra is the study of the Upanishads. A very analytical, very analytical, thematic study of the Upanishads. So that same formula has been used by Srila Prabhupada to analyze Bhagavad Gita. Right? So in other words, Vedanta Sutra is that analytical study of the philosophy of the Bhagavad. Right? So this is the analytical study of Gita, right? Or the Upanishads. Because the Upanishads are the essence of the Vedas, and from that you've gotten Vedanta Sutra and the Bhagavatam. So the Vedanta Sutra will be that analytical, study, and the other will be more of a conversation, that nice, pleasant presentation that you're able to catch things as it goes. Right? Then the Upadeshamrita will be studied according to the Tattva Sutras. Bhaktivinoda Thakur established the Upanishadic, our philosophy, the Bhagavat philosophy, presented according to the Upanishadic formulas in the Tattva Sutras. So then that is being applied to the Ishopanishad, right? Nectar devotion, then it has its analysis that we see is accomplished in so many of these works of the Acharyas. They go through in so many different themes and ways of studying the themes that are there. And then the Upadeshamrita, that itself is the essence of the nectar devotion. So that will be the second year where one learns to analyze the philosophy. Then the third year will be seeing the essential points of the philosophy, understanding the various Vedic ways of approaching the philosophy, and also a study of an overview of the Vedic literature. So you actually know what are the scriptures that the Gita is the essence of. Right. All the Vedic literatures are there. Their essence is given in the Mahabharata. Gita is the actual essence of the Mahabharata. So what is it that is talked about in this Vedic culture? What is the breadth of knowledge that's being given? So that's what would be studied. So each of these years, they carry their own degree. So they're complete in themselves, but at the same time, they're a natural chronological study. So then what will be happening? And then the idea is also, since by observation, most devotees aren't here all the time. They're much of the time out of Mayapur. They're either visiting Mayapur, or even if they live in Mayapur, so much of the time they're not in Mayapur. So what we're trying to do is, instead of running it at like before, 1-2 classes a day, we're going to run it for a shorter time between now and Gaur Purnima, at 4 periods a day. So there'll be 2 periods for the Gita, 1 for nectar devotion, 1 for Ishapanishad. And the Upadeshamrita will be fitted in between the nectar devotion and Ishapanishad. Does that make sense? So that way then, in the 4.5 months of this term, then one will be able to study, everything that was originally planned to be studied in this course, but to a proper depth and degree. So there is work to do, but it's not more than one needs to do. Right? I mean more than one can do. So Gita basically, tomorrow we'll discuss it more over this week, we'll present it for next week, that what is necessary, basically you're studying a chapter of Gita a week, or a chapter of the Ishopanishad, or nectar devotion. Sometimes it may be a bit more, sometimes a bit less. So that's not a lot of reading in a week. And for each of these, every week, there'll be an essay to be written. The essay is short, half page to one page. We don't want more. One is we don't need to spend the time writing it. and two is if you can't write what you, for what we're doing is if you can't write what you want to say in half a page or one page means you don't actually know what you want to say. You know? So this is not, let's see your erudition and how much facts and figures you can pull together. We're talking about, do you understand the essence of the points we've discussed? Right? So this is not a exercise in essay writing, creative writing, you know, in preparing for, you know, writing doctoral theses that, you know, you have to have 300 pages, otherwise they won't look at it. This is, do you actually know what we're talking about? Do you actually know what you're trying to say? That's why we've chosen half a page. If you can say it in half a page, it means you know what you're talking about. Right? We're not talking here about a full exposition on it. That will take many pages. That you could take books. And we're just saying, do you understand the essence? Right? So that's what is there. It's not being graded on your English, but it is being graded on the content. Right? So we don't, no excuse, well, I don't know English. It's a matter of, you get to the essence. I don't care if it's in pidgin English, but it better be saying what we've been talking about. Like that. It's not an excuse. I won't buy as an excuse, I don't know English. Right? That's not going to fly. We're not grading it on your content of your language. Other courses and other schools do. You can't write a nice essay, you're not going to get very far. Here, it's a separate thing. Even for the boys, when they do it, it's two things. They're getting graded for their English, they're getting graded for the philosophy. Right? Adults will only worry about your philosophy. Don't worry about the English. But you have to say what you mean to say. So if you know what you're saying, you'll be able to write it. If you don't know, you won't be able to write it. Right? Does that make sense? That's why I always keep asking, when you have a question, say it in one sentence. These 5-minute questions means you actually don't know what you're talking about. Or you think you're the only one that knows what you're talking about, and so therefore you feel, unless I give the whole background, no one else will understand. No, we understand. As soon as the first sentence comes out of your mouth, we know what you're talking about. We don't even have to listen to your 5-minute question. We can give you an answer. But because of the emotions and you feel, unless I've spoken for 5 minutes, you don't have the background, so you won't understand the emotional angle I'm coming from, so therefore you won't be able to answer my question. But this is not a, you know, a psychoanalysis here. Right? Like that. If it is, then please deposit $300, you know, before the session. You know, that's what we charge per hour. Right? That's a standard rate. In fact, now most of the time it's $500. But, you know, we'll settle for $300. Okay? You understand? So, this is intellectual understanding. If there are emotions involved, you have some misgivings, fine. But still, word your question according to intelligence. Which means the point. Then once you've made the point, then if there's need be, then you explain it. That is the Vedic system. Panchanga Nyaya, right, means my point. I can explain my point, meaning just to expand. I can give examples to support my point. Right? Anything that opposes my point, I can absorb within my philosophy, my presentation, and I can bring you to a conclusion now that you can practically use. That's nyaya. That's logic. Right? All this talking around, this is the mind. That's emotions. It's not intelligence. We may use big words, fancy references. It still doesn't mean it's just not fancy emotions. That's all. Does this make sense? Yes.
I have a question from some of the correspondence students, because last year there was a delay in uploading the classes, so are they also...
That you would have to ask to Shanti Kutla, like that. That kind of technical stuff you ask me. Like that. You ask me about this. That thing is, I wouldn't know which end of the computer, you know, would be uploading or downloading your stuff. Okay.
Okay.
Yes. So basically, is there'll be discussions during the week. You should have read the material before the discussion so that it has more relevance. And at the end of the week, in other words, on the weekend, you write the essay for the previous week's discussions and study, and you study and read for the next week. If you want to do it during the week, however you do it, that's there. We've also arranged that all the classes are in the morning before noon, so that the afternoon and the evening you have free. Because I know it's much easier to focus if you don't have to keep moving back and forth or worry about things. Everything's in the morning, so there's a lot happening, but then after that it's free, so then you want to eat, you want to take a nap, you want to do whatever you want to do, you will be able to get the time. Well, we found if you keep going back and forth, somehow the time runs out, and you know, as it is with the half of the day free, still the sun will set, and you know, Mangal Arati will happen. You know, so you still are on a bit of a time. Okay? Make sense? Okay. So now, as you don't know, but this we're going to start discussing the introduction. So then it would be best is that today that is read, then it will make some more sense. Because in the class we're going to go through and hit the main points. You're going to have the study guide that goes with it, so you're going to read and look at the study guide so you understand what you're reading. You know? How you want to, you have any recommendation on that? Read the study guide, then read the thing, read the thing, read the study guide. Read them together, don't read them. Huh? Together, okay. So basically, you'll find out what works for you. Because what is being given here is what are the essential points. Interesting is, as these points go through, Prabhupada in his presentations is so analytical, exacting when he goes through, that it exactly follows in that order. It's not like there's a little here, a little there, and that. No, it just exactly goes. And the fun part is that this is taken from, the introduction is taken from a lecture that he gave. And the lecture is so analytical and so progressive, naturally chronologically progressive, that you can, when we say here, the spirit of Gita, that's the first point. You'll just go through and then you'll say, so the spirit of Gita, and then he'll just talk. And then the next point, the purpose of Gita. So then he'll say, therefore the purpose, like this. It's very, very nice. So this is what we're trying to learn. It's not just a matter of memorizing philosophy. And this is not memorization. Here we want you is understanding. Even better is realization. Realization's up to you. Realization comes by understanding and contemplating the philosophy and practicing it. Right? You practice the philosophy that you're contemplating, you get realization. You don't practice it, you'll get understanding. Right? If you're sharp. Like that. But doing service and studying the philosophy together, that gives realization. If you only do one or the other, you won't get realization. Right? So that's why somebody is a great scholar, but doesn't seem to be well situated devotionally because they don't connect it to their life. Right? So it doesn't have any, they don't get realization, so it doesn't change their lifestyle. Or you have the devotee who very nicely practices, but he's not philosophical, doesn't analyze what he's doing. Therefore, his sentiment is very strong, but something happens, he gets distracted. You understand? So you, in your own life, may have seen examples of both of these. This is why. They have to be combined. You know? So, since you're not in the school, we can't oversee that you're working in this way. Does that make sense?
What are you doing next
stage? Sounds good. Sounds good.
But that's actually Sanskrit that's happening? Or that's, just tell them we're down here and so down. Tell them it's, we're very nice to know that they're, you know, busy in language, so that they're busy in language skills. Otherwise, they should move to the next floor up. Okay, so now, what's going to be given? So, the introduction of the Gita is giving an analysis of the main points of the Gita and the main points that you have to understand to actually be able to study properly the Gita. Right? So as we discussed in the past, This is all based on philosophy, is based on the principles defined as vastu traya. Vastu means substance, traya means three. The three substances. You have your sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. Right? So, what all the aspects of these, you understand that, you actually understand what's going on. You don't understand all of them, you actually won't fully understand. You may know more than others, you may be able to quote more verses and this and that. That's nice. But you should fill it out and complete it by actually understanding all the aspects. So your sambandha is going to establish the field of activity, which includes yourself, God, and the material energy that's there, whatever you're dealing with. Right? So material energy is a nature, and all aspects of it work according to the same fundamental principles. Right? Detail will be different. Right? You're working with a brick, you're working with a rock, there is a slight difference. Right? You can build with both of them, they're both hard, like this, but there is a slight difference how you'll deal with them. You're building a rock wall, it'll be different than a brick wall. But the point is you can build a wall. Right? So, you have to understand who you are, who God is, and what the material energy is. So that establishes your identity. So what is the proper relationship? Who are you? Who's God and all this? What's the material energy? What's your relationship? Right? Then you have to be inspired. You have to know what's the proper mood in approaching it. You have to know what your goals are. You have to know the process to get the goals. So all this is what is included within sambandha. Right? In other words, it is the knowledge of the relationship and everything about the activity and results you're going to get. But there's no action here. It's simply the intellectual understanding and your commitment to it. In other words, intellectually analyzing and the mind being convinced, so it also is partner to the whole process. Right? So then that is focus. Then abhideya will be the actual application. Right? The techniques of application. And your prayojana will be your results. Right? What will be the experience of that, benefits of that, like this. Does this make sense? So if you're analyzing it, basically it's sambandha. Unless you're analyzing how exactly the process works, that will be abhideya. Like nectar devotion is the science of the application. Right? But it's based on the field, which is defined in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. Hari Bhakti Vilas defines the field of devotional service. Right? But nectar devotion defines how you deal with that field. Right? That's why Rupa Goswami then refers to Sanatana Goswami in the sixth chapter, saying that all these principles of devotional service are mentioned in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. He's giving the essence. Does it make sense? You understand how this works, this concept? Okay. So, now then, the first point is in then the spirit in which the Gita should be approached. Right? So, in other words, if you don't have the right attitude, it means you don't understand who you are. You don't understand what you're dealing with. Right? You're dealing with a little kid, there's a mood that you deal. You're dealing with an adult, it's different. Somebody respectable, it's different. Somebody who is, you know, you should be very careful of, it's different again. Does this make sense? Right? So there must be the proper spirit. You must know how to approach it. Right? Because here means the spirit means you've included the mind. So this, the place we're going in is you have to be inspired to be involved. If you're not involved, why will you go to the trouble to figure out everything else? Does it make sense? Now this is a way of analyzing the whole thing. So this isn't just arbitrary things. These are things, this point, these points here are what you should know. Right? Any subject matter will be approached in this way. Right? So it's being given in the Gita. That's why this is the first course. This is what establishes the method. I'll put it on my desk. Let me see that one. Let me just say. No, this is Matthew. It's the other one.
Other one.
Yeah, the one is more back. It says in the in its front. It says Krishna Chaitanya.
Okay. Okay.
Here's Okay. Okay, so that's the first thing, is that you know there's a field, you're inspired to be involved in it. Right? That's the first thing. The second thing is then you have the purpose, what you're trying to get to. Okay, now being involved with this, what results will I get? What will be the purpose of being involved in this? You know, what will I get from it? So unless you can understand that, then you're not going to be inspired. So you know, okay, I want to be involved, this is what I can get. Right? Or this is what's available. Then the third point is the actual subject matter itself. Right? That will be the subject matter itself means what is the body of work in describing specifically Sambandha, but also anything to do with the Abhidaya approach. That's just what it is. In other words, what is the topic? So that's the main, but we can see that's the third thing you've come to. Then the fourth will be the process of understanding it, now actually applying it. What will be that process by which you can gain it? Then the fifth will be the result of understanding it. Right? You have, okay, the field will do this for me. By chanting Hare Krishna, I'll develop love of God. Okay? That is the purpose. But the result, now developing love for God, what will that be? Right? Then you go back to Godhead. You understand? There's a difference here. That's why it's really, means, in other words, don't take these parts lightly. Because this is what you're going to be dealing with. This is how you break things down and analyze it. Then the sixth is how to practically apply this knowledge to attain the desired result. Right? So we have the process of understanding, but then you have to how to practically apply it. Right? So we see is that within Sambandha there is the understanding of all three parts, but then you actually have to be able to apply it and get the result. Right? So in the Sambandha element, then you're going to be dealing with the spirit, the purpose, the subject, and the process. Right? Analyzing that. Right? What'll be the mood, what'll be the purpose, what's the subject, and what are the processes. Then you have the result, and then you have how to practically apply this. So you're going to see, even in the Bhagavatam, in the Chatur Shloki, it uses the same formula. The first verse, Krishna is everything. The second verse, then what's important to you, that's what is Krishna. So that's going to be your what is it you're looking for and everything. So the spirit is, everything's Krishna. Right? Then the purpose is, you're obtaining your values. Then how you're going to, then how to understand God in all these different aspects. Like this. Then what is it you have to do? Is the devotee, in other words, be a devotee. Then you can understand the process. Result, then you'll be able to, you know, interact with God face to face. Then the process, you know, how to practically apply that at every time, place, and circumstance, you try to apply this knowledge. In other words, the Abhideya is always trying to apply this knowledge of, you know, Sambandha and Prayojana. Right? Who you are, you know, what's your relationship with the Lord, what is the result from interacting in that relationship, what is that process, trying to apply that. That's Abhideya. Understand? So here, Prabhupada has taken the Sambandha and divided it up into four. Generally, we've seen it's divided. We, you know, just as a basic, it's divided up into two. Here it's made into four. Right? So you're getting the spirit, the purpose, the subject, and the process. Right? So generally, we think of the subject and the process like that. Or yeah, purpose. Actually, you get all three: purpose, subject, process. But here, then, the mood is being given. Does this make sense?
Is that correspond to the chaturvyuha?
This may, within the Sambandha, it may be. We'd have to. Yeah, you could say within Sambandha, then you can apply all four of the Chaturvyuha. So the spirit would be Prajumna, the purpose would be Aniruddha, the subject would be Sankarshan, and your process would be Vasudeva. So So you have all four within that. Then you have the actual application. Then is, you know, but all that will be within. And then you'll have five, that will be your result. And then six, the practical application. So those are, you know, it means observable. You're performing the activity, you're getting results. Right?
Can you more explain what is the difference between interest in the field and the knowledge of the result?
Interest in the field means you're inspired to take part in it. But by taking part, what will be the result? You know what I'm saying? So, and the field itself, you have the field. What it is, what do the various aspects of the field, what do they give? You know what I'm saying? Like you're chanting, then that puts you in contact with Krishna. And you become purified by being in Krishna's association. Therefore, then that will bring you, elevate you to the platform of understanding yourself in the relationship with the Lord. You understand? Those are your purposes. In other words, you have something. You go into a kitchen. What is the purpose of a pot or a spoon or the fire? You know, what are the results you can get? You can make some nice cooked food. Right? You know, that's directly what you get. But the point is ultimately, then having that cooked food, what will be the result? That's why there's a slight difference between the sambandha analyzation of results and the actual result. Because when you have the food, you're going to do something with it. Feed devotees and interact and all that. So in other words, the cooking process is going to get you cooked food, but dealing with cooked food, then you're going to have social interaction. Does that make sense? So there's some like that. So the spirit is that you go into the kitchen, you're cooking for Krishna, not cooking for yourself. Or not that you really hate to be in the kitchen and you have to be there. Right? So, right spirit, the right mood is that I'm cooking for Krishna, doing some nice service for Krishna. Right? The purpose is that then I can produce something that is cooked nice for Krishna. Right? Means the subject matter, how to cook, what are the recipes, and all things like this. The processes of understanding is that, well, how to go about, how to see that it works. Well, how can I analyze, is it cooking properly, and all this and that. Does that make sense? So you're seeing all that. Then you can then deal with the result of understanding and how to practically apply. But the point is all six of these are still within somebody. But it's dealing with all that. Okay, the spirit of Gita. Krishna is the Supreme Lord, Bhagavan. B. Gita is understood by a devotee like Arjuna, who is in a direct relationship with Krishna. C. Only by the process of devotional service can one revive one's relationship with Krishna. D. Therefore, Gita should be taken up in a spirit of devotion. Right? Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Then only by having a relationship with Krishna can it be understood. Therefore, only through devotional service can you develop that relationship. So therefore, you should have that devotional understanding to take it up. Does that make sense? Kind of. Right? In other words, Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Only devotees can understand the Supreme Lord. So if you want to understand the Supreme Lord, then you have to take it up as a devotee. Right? So we see he's giving exact here. The Supreme Lord is here, Gita is understood by a devotee. Right? But it's only by devotional service can one have that relationship with Krishna. Right? So therefore, Bhagavad Gita should be taken as a spirit of devotion. Right? In other words, logic means you have A, and A is related to B. Right? Then you have to establish B is related to C. Right? Then you can say, because A is related to B, B to C, A is related to C. This is proper logic. Right? The example given is, there's a fire on the mountain. Right? Does that make sense? So fire means mountain, and there's smoke on the mountain. Right? And so you have mountain, you have smoke. So the smoke and the mountain are connected. But smoke and fire are connected. Right? And if you can establish that, then that means then the fire and the mountain are connected. Does it make sense? This is logic. So it's something that basically, this is one of the main things. If you can catch this, then you'll be able to think and deal with things logically. This is all, it's that simple. Nyaya, its basic is A equals B, B equals C, therefore A equals C. That's what you're trying to do. You're inferring what's there. So Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay. So now Gita is understood by a devotee who is in a direct relationship with Krishna. Right? So you can understand Gita if you're in a direct relationship with Krishna. Right? So the next point is that only by devotional service can one have a direct relationship with Krishna. Right? So that means we've said Gita is understood by a devotee. You can only be a devotee, a devotee who has a relationship with Krishna. So therefore, only through devotional service can you have a relationship with Krishna. So only those who are trying to have a relationship with Krishna can understand the Gita. Understand this? A, B, C? Here? Okay. So then the point is we should at least theoretically accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, and then, otherwise we'll not be able to understand Gita. So at least in theory we have to accept. Otherwise we can't understand Gita, because Gita can only be understood by someone in a relationship with Krishna. So unless you accept the process to have that relationship with Krishna, you'll never understand Gita. Does this make sense? Right? So it means as with time this will become more easily understandable. It means this process. But this is what you'll learn. In other words, you may go to other courses of Bhakti Shastri, and you will learn, you'll go through the book, you'll learn a lot of material, there'll be a lot of understanding or realizations, but here specifically we're trying to learn how to analyze the philosophy to practically use it in yours and others' life. You understand analyzation, then you can see where either your own or other practices or understandings are wrong, then you can correct it. Right? If you can just drive your car and if something goes wrong, you know nothing about the car, can you fix it? No. You can drive the car, but if something goes wrong, you can do nothing. But if you know how the car works, you can drive the car, something goes wrong, you can fix it. So in the philosophy, we know the basic points. And so therefore we're involved in the philosophy. Right? But the problem comes is if we don't understand how to analyze the philosophy, if there's some problem there, we won't be able to deal with that. And that may distract us, or it may make us not so effective in our preaching. Does that make sense? So this is what we're trying to gain here. That's why I'm saying it's not a matter of memorization. It's a matter of having an understanding of what is actually going on in this book. You know, what is the philosophy that's been given? Because Gita is Upanishad. We say, in the Vedic, when you say something is foundational, it doesn't mean it's for babies. It means it is the essence. And from the essence, you can expand unlimitedly. Right? Does this make sense? Right? So just like, let's say, in a kitchen, are the pots and pans and fire and all that, are these like, because that's what you have to start with, so is that for babies? As you become more advanced, then you don't have pots and pans. You understand? No. It's more advanced means you can do more things with those pots and pans. That's what it means. Yeah? So that means what's being in the Gita, as you advance, you can do more with it. So anything else is based on that. It's a very difference in approach between the modern and the Vedic. Because in the modern, what you learn in your lower grades, they don't worry about that in the higher levels. At the same time, in the lower levels, they're trying to deal with higher level stuff, though they haven't taught you the basic stuff. You know what I'm saying? They try to treat you, teach you creative writing. You don't actually even know grammar. But you know, does that make sense? So in other words, it's an art. So they're just trying to... The Veda is a science. So the foundation, because it's descending knowledge. Right? So Krishna is the origin. That's very simple. It's one point. But he expands into the whole cosmic creation. That's unlimited. So there's one fundamental point. There's unlimited expansion of that point. Does it make sense? Yeah? So are all these kind of deadpan faces because you're thoughtful and thinking, or it absolutely doesn't mean anything and you're wondering, what is this guy blabbering about? Thoughtful. Any other opinions? That's the preferred social standing to take? Okay, just to make sure. Okay, so now the spirit is there. If that right mood is there, then you can do. In other words, if the mood's not devotional, it's not going to work. So that's why the materialist, he can have the same thing. He has a different spirit. Right? He'll get a different result. He can memorize Gita. He can know all the shlokas. He can analyze it, take words, and do all this and that, go on forever. But he won't develop a relationship with Krishna. So since we're studying Gita to develop a relationship with Krishna, therefore then we have to follow that devotional process. Right? So we can see that we're trying to understand Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you understand Him, you understand everything. Right? Prabhupada says, when the sun comes up in the morning, then you can see yourself in the mirror. You can try to see yourself all night. You won't, because there's no light. Right? So we are reflecting that mood and that relationship that Krishna has with the devotees. We can reflect that. Does that make sense? You know, it's mentioned, I think it's Narottam Das Thakur in his song to Rupa Goswami, that he is serving Krishna, Radharani and Krishna so nicely, so that service then will reflect on him. Right? He'll be able to reflect that and reflect that back. So their nice mood and service, he can reflect that to enhance their service. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, you look fine, right? But you look in the mirror and appreciate how fine it is, you're happier. You understand? So that's the point. The jivas can reflect that mood that is there with Krishna and the direct associates. You understand? We can reflect that. It's not us. It's not our devotion. Right? Radharani, she has devotion. We can reflect that devotion. It's not that it's now it's our devotion. You understand? So that's why it's always been said, we're a servant. We're serving the servant. So we serve by reflecting. Does that make sense? So the point is it's Krishna, and then we're trying to understand how Krishna is in everything. So to understand how Krishna is in everything, then we have to that can only be done by someone who's a devotee of Krishna. Right? So that means only by the process of devotional service can you become a devotee. So therefore, to understand the Supreme Lord, I have to accept the mood of devotional service. Does that make sense? Right. We catch that logic. Right? So when we say logic, I don't just mean, okay, if what we're saying is chronological, I mean it has to connect. Yes?
Why is it that only a devotee can understand that Krishna is the origin of everything?
Why only a devotee can understand? Because Krishna is a person and he doesn't like to be, analyzed by someone who is not favorable. You know, it's just like you're sitting there and someone comes up and starts looking at you, checking you out, walking around the back, and, you know, like that. You're going to feel uncomfortable. Why? Because there's no relationship. It's just their own intellect. Why would they want to know? Just for their own intellectual purpose. You're a person. So you don't mind somebody knowing who you are if there's a relationship. So if they're willing to have a relationship with you, you don't mind them knowing who you are. So that's the point. There's God. You want to know God. That's only can be happened through devotion. Therefore, only through devotion means through the devotional process can you know. Right? It means God can be known only by devotees. Devotees means they practice devotion. So only by devotion can you know God. Does that make sense? So that's so now that we have that spirit is there, then the purpose of the Gita. Yes.
You
know,
Gyani
won't accept, but that's why it's being presented in this logic. See, devotees sometimes have this, you know, in their whatever reason, their, you know, unintelligentness or foolishness or whatever, I know, lack of faithfulness that may be there, that Prabhupada's books are very basic. Right here is given the logic that probably still you're all struggling with to understand. And it's the first point of opening in the introduction to the Gita. Prabhupada mentions when you're speaking to those who don't accept the Vedic literatures, then the only recourse is logic. Because they don't have faith in Krishna. They don't accept the Vedic literature as authority. So therefore, nyaya, or logic, has to be the basis of your presentation. And so here we have a perfect example of that logic. Right? And the Prabhupada has explained it there. So, this is the point. You learn this, you can always explain it. Prabhupada can explain anything to anybody. Because he understood these points. He understood how the philosophy works. But how logic as a presentation of the philosophy works. Because you have philosophy and you have logic. Right? So they're technically two different things. But when philosophy is applied logically, right, it means philosophy is mimamsa. Right? And for us specifically is Vedanta. Then you have logic, which is nyaya. When nyaya and mimamsa are combined, that's called anvikshiki. Right? So anvikshiki, this is what is to be taught. Right? You learn the two subjects, but you learn them connected to each other. Then there's a meaning. Right? Is that okay? Yes.
Is there a need for us to study nyaya separately?
To study nyaya separately means what fundamentals will be needed. That will come in the third year. Study it. But before that, you have to be understanding the points you're going to work with. Like that. But all the presentation of any Prabhupada's purports and anything is always according to logic. As I mentioned, you have 5 points. You're going to have, means you basically, your logic, it means your modern will say you have your theory, you have that you're what's against your theory, and then you have their synthesis. That's all the farther they go. Because they're afraid of anything beyond that. Because the point is in your theory, that's the first point of logic. The second point is you expand on that just to explain it so that they're clear what you're talking about. Right? So it's like here, Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Okay. So that is your theory, your thesis. But then it says, Bhagavan. That's your explanation. Because he's the Supreme Lord, but there's so many aspects of the Supreme Lord. So which one are you talking about? So Bhagavan. Right? Because otherwise, if you say, Krishna is God, that's the theory, or the thesis. But then, what do they mean? What do you mean by God? You know, they said that. So there's no argument comes up at this point. But then when you explain it, he's God, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. Then at this point, then you say, well, then you have your argument. Then you have your antithesis. Because it's said, no, but you know, God's not a person. God's the force, the Brahman, the Schwartz, whatever it is, like that. Does that make sense? So, then that's where you have your problem. That's where it comes up. Now you give your examples to prove your theory right and to disprove theirs. So, they'll bring up their, problem with it. So they'll have their theory, but they'll also have to give their explanation. And then you have your example. So that's then when it starts going. Synthesis means then you show how what they're saying is already in your philosophy. That's why yours is greater. Right? Means, you're saying 100 rupees. They're saying, no, 10 rupees. But then you have to prove to them that 10 rupees is already in 100 rupees. So they understand that they want the 10 rupees, but if they take your philosophy, they have 10 of their 10 rupees. Right? Then the conclusion, this is where the modern stops. They stop before conclusion. They don't want a conclusion, because conclusion means you have to apply it. Right? Because here, how to practically apply this knowledge to obtain the desired result. That's the conclusion. So how to take that theory and apply it. Is this what I said? This is Panchanga Nyaya. This is Lot. This is Nyaya. Like that. Anything else is a detail on that. You know, all the different ways that you can misrepresent or, you know, in other words, you say A equals B, B equals C, but actually B doesn't equal C, or, you know, I mean, there's something wrong there. You just simply say, there's a jump there, there's a gap. Generally, you'll find when most are discussing points that aren't right because there's a gap they make. There's something wrong. There's a fallacy. It's not real. You know? You know what I'm saying? How you say? Yeah. So it's like okay. Something else you have? Yes.
I have a question about philosophy and logic are two different aspects.
Yes.
So I don't understand the difference between them or how
philosophy is defining God and His creation. Logic will be ways to intellectually present things that they have a natural connecting chronological order so that it makes sense. Because otherwise, one can do it just by feelings. Right? Like generally you see most religions of the world, they deal just with their feelings, the faith. You have faith. And if you have faith, then that's enough. But faith in what? That's what the philosophy defines. So they don't analyze how, you know, why you should have faith in God. You know, what's the reason? Just He's bigger than you, and if you don't, then He's going to make trouble for you. You know, it's just like bully on the block. You know, you don't do what He says, there's going to be a problem for you. So it's basically just an element of control. He's a bigger controller, you're a smaller controller, so therefore you have to, you know, listen to what He says. Not that there's something beyond that, just you'll get into trouble. And if you don't get into trouble, you do what He says, then He'll give you a nice place to live. Right? So it's the whole approach is based on the mind. It's the feeling, and you don't want any trouble, and if you behave yourself, then you get better facilities. So you have the fruitive element. You know, faith in the fruitive element. But there's no real philosophy there. Otherwise, how do you define God? You know what I'm saying? Why do you have to worship God? You know, how is He greater? What does He do? That they can't explain. So there's the gaps. And those gaps are filled by logic. That's why the prominence was there, because religion's important, and there must be that faith, and the mind is why you do things. So focusing on that, then world religion becomes very prominent. That's why it's called world religion. But the problem comes with time, because there is no analyzation, there is no logic. Then people need some logic that the religion is not offering, therefore they turn to science. But they don't understand science is still just the analyzation of God's creation. It's still the same thing. You're still studying the same thing. But to do that, then, because the religion is based simply on faith, not on philosophy, right, or logic, then when logic is established, it has to be established outside of the perimeter of faith. So therefore, science and faith become two separate things. Of course, people have faith in science. But as far as religion goes, then they may not dare, and they have more faith in science. Right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So then it comes down to is that you have to be able to logically explain, because the science is what you are living. That's why it's lifestyle. Realization means that science you are applying in your life. Then it works.
So is it the Can you say that logic is proving the philosophy?
No, logic is simply explaining it in a way that you can understand it. The philosophy doesn't have to be proven like that. It's come from God. But in the minds of those who don't understand it or don't have faith, it has to be proven to them. So it's a medium to prove it to those who don't have faith, or to prove to yourself in areas where you haven't applied it or analyzed it, or where one may have some weakness like that. But the point is facts are facts. You know, it's just logic is a intellectual way of presentation. Right? Now, as examples, because you want to make it realistic for the person you're talking to, you use examples that will be in touch with the lifestyle and values of who you're discussing with. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like that. So that will then. So the mind is involved, because what you're trying to do is they don't understand it because the mind is blocking it. Otherwise, it's very logical. Right? You know, it means everything goes on perfectly. And so that means there must be intelligence. And so it's on such a grand scale, there must be a superior intelligence. It's very logical. But because of the mind, then we may or may not accept that. But otherwise, you know, it just takes that much, just that one point, you should be able to prove to anybody with any kind of scientific feelings that, you know, there must be a God. For even if someone isn't scientific, they're only emotional, but why is it everybody has the same kind of emotions and can relate? So who's arranged that everybody understands happiness or distress or, you know, pleasure, pain, these concepts? Why is it there? Why is the great masses of people, they have the same concept of what is pleasure and pain? So that means there must be higher authority. So very easily it can be established, but people, because of the mind, the mind gets in the way. Therefore, the logical process. The mind can be controlled by the intelligence. The mind can be convinced by the intelligence. So using a process that's intellectual, but it includes those processes of the mind, of accepting and rejecting, that make it accessible to the mind. Right? Because the mind has to be able to. You're going to use it if your mind accepts it. It may be very logical, right? You know, these people smoke cigarettes, these people died of lung cancer, right? You know, you smoke, the smoke goes into your lungs, you know, like that. So, and you get cancer in the lungs. Lungs caused by smoke. So therefore, the process of smoking cigarettes creates the cancer. You understand? So you're presenting that. So therefore, smoking is bad for your health, right? Cancer is not good for your health. So therefore, smoking creates cancer. So therefore, smoking is bad for your health. You understand? But there are people who won't accept that. Many people who smoke know that, but they're attached to it. But there are people who will say, no. Right? I saw once an ad, a little short video of a lady who had, what do you call it, tracheotomy? Tracheotomy means they have to cut a hole here. You can't breathe through your mouth because of she had cancer and had to have everything removed. But she was smoking here and saying that, you know, smoking doesn't cause all this. This is not my problem. I didn't get this right. So, I mean, that's determined, right? That means the mind hasn't accepted. But others, their mind accepts it, you know, it means logically, but it means that it's logical, but they don't accept it as lifestyle. There's no realization. So therefore, they don't stop smoking. You know what I'm saying? And then when their best friend, who also smokes, you know, his smoking buddy, dies of cancer, then he might get some realization. So then he stops smoking. You understand? Because the mind that has to accept. So the process of nyaya is how to convince the mind through using intellectual analyzation. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay, second, the purpose of Bhagavad Gita. Everyone is full of anxiety because of this material existence. The cause of suffering and the actual destination of life are proper subjects for inquiry. Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to answer these questions and to make Arjuna understand his position, thus relieving him of all miseries. Right? Okay. So now we see here the logic is like one is full of anxiety because of material existence. Right? So now the cause of suffering, the actual destination of life. Now means what we're dealing with material energy, we're suffering. So how is it that we're suffering? What causes the suffering? Right? So if we see what causes the suffering, then we see then natural will come with that understanding will be the principle of an actual destination. Because we're dealing with material energy to be happy. But in dealing with material energy, we're not happy, we're suffering. Right? So we're trying to get happiness. But the problem in the material world is temporary. The soul's eternal. Right? So this is going to be a major cause for suffering. Is that all the happiness that you want is temporary. Right? We're eternal. So that means there must be a situation in which we can be happy eternally. Right? Because this situation doesn't happen. Right? And so the cause of it will be how we deal with it. We deal with material energy on the material platform. It presents a temporary result. Therefore, we suffer. We deal with the material energy on the eternal platform. It gives us an eternal result. We don't suffer. Right? We go back to Godhead. Right? Does that make sense? So, Krishna spoke Gita to answer these queries. Right? We're full of anxiety. We're dealing with the material world. Where are we, you know, what's the alternative? So the Gita is to answer that. Right? So then the study of Gita is to relieve one of all anxieties. Right? Does that make sense? So here's, catch the logic? Right? Again, the three point A, B, C. Okay, so means anxiety is coming because of material existence. Right? We're only going to get rid of that material existence by understanding actually what it is. So Gita, Krishna spoke to Gita to explain that. How to go beyond. So therefore, study. You want to remove material existence, the anxiety, you have to study Gita. So that's the purpose. Does that make sense? Okay. So, with the overwhelming need for spiritual knowledge, see, so, now in this you'll find that like this is just in this way, it's like getting through these first point took more time because we're trying to understand the concept of the logic, concept of what we're dealing with, Sambandhavide Prayojana. So it takes more, but now this one, then it came easier because now we understand the process. So that's the idea, is that the Gita will come slow, more slowly here, like this. Certain points will be slower and then it'll come eventually. Then, from that, then you analyze it, so you make sure that you understand it in all the different ways. Then you understand its position in the Vedic literatures and all that. Then from that, you understand that Bhagavatam is the best of all the Vedic literatures. Then you start studying Bhakti Bhav. But then, what may take us an hour or days to deal with on this Gita level, because it's new, on the Bhagavatam level, you'd be able to deal with in 5 minutes. Right? That's why it will take us, you know, a whole year to do one book, you know, Gita. But we're you know, in Bhakti by Bhav, you're dealing with how many books? Six cantos. And it's like you have one for one, two for a second canto, three is two, four is two, five is two. I think six is two also. Isn't it? So you're dealing with nine books. In three times time. So that means three books in a year. Does that make sense? But it will go quicker because this process will be easily understandable. Does that make sense? Right? So this first year will be, there'll be much more seeming volume, but it's actually not. It's just, it's newness. Then when you get to Bhagavatam, there you deal with volume. Right? But it'll be understandable, so you'll be able to go to more depth. Because the point is, it's not you're learning more facts. There's no more facts to be learned in Bhagavatam. What you're learning is the depth of it. Right? The process of naishkarmya, or performing unattached work for elevation, is described in the second chapter of the Gita, right? And then will be brought out more in the third chapter and in the fifth chapter, right? And then concluded in the 18th chapter. Then that is discussed in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, but to much more analyzation. It is also discussed in the third canto, in Kapila Muni's discussions. You understand? So what philosophy you'll get in the Gita, that is the philosophy. Now there's unlimited expansion. Right? So that's why one has to be very clear. So it's not a matter of memorization. Right? It's a matter of understanding what's going on. Right? We will give you verses that these should be known, right? Prominent verses that you should know, be familiar with. So we'll expect you to do that, but it's not a matter of that you have them all memorized, you can write, you know, the Sanskrit word for word in the translation. No, if we ask you about this verse, you have to be able to explain it. Can't explain it means you don't know it. So it's not memorization, it's understanding. Does that make sense? So it's, maybe you don't remember it, but if you see it, you can speak on it. Like, you don't remember all the verses of Gita, but if you sit down to give a Gita class, the verse is in front of you. Now can you speak on it? Does that make sense? You've memorized it, good, so you should be able to speak on it. So if you have a good memory, you'll be able to memorize it. Great. But this isn't an exercise in memory. This is an exercise in understanding. Does that make sense? We understand what this course is to do? Okay. With the overwhelming need for spiritual knowledge clearly established, Srila Prabhupada outlines the context of the Bhagavad Gita, which can be summarized as follows. Now the context, right? That's the third. Because if you don't know the mood and you don't know the purpose, why would you even want to get involved to learn what the subject matter is anyway? You understand? So, in other words, it's being presented logically, but according to how the mind thinks. Because the mind has got to think, you know, okay, you know, why should I be involved? You know, what do I get out of it? You know? So once that's established, then you can discuss the subject matter. So then the third point, then, is the subject matter of Bhagavad Gita. So basically, then there's five truths. Right? Ishvara, Jiva, Prakriti, Kala, and Karma. Right? This is the knowledge, yes.
So if we don't have doubts or misgivings, knowledge presented doesn't have to be so logical?
How do you say? If there's no doubts, you don't have to get into so much broad explanation. But it should always be analytical. Otherwise, you don't have a doubt now. If you don't study analytically, what happens later if someone presents a doubt and you don't know it analytically? You know, just like, let's say, I think one temple was there. And, how do you say? You know, there was this nice, like, community here in the temple. You know, quite a nice community. Then one devotee had problem, I think, with their marriage. And so they went to a marriage counselor. You know, or some kind of psychiatrist, something like that, one of these professional persons. Then in discussing with them, then they came up as that, you know, you're restricting your life so much, that's your anxiety. So you're in anxiety about your marriage or this or that because you're restricting your life. You're not being free and being yourself. But if you were free and were yourself, then you wouldn't have these anxieties. Right? And so the devotee, not knowing the philosophy that well, became convinced. Then this devotee, you know, going back to the temple, because they lived in the temple and all that environment, somehow or another convinced all the other ladies in the temple, and within 6 months the whole temple was gone. That's why you have to be able to analyze. Because otherwise, you knew the philosophy. It's like even if you did whatever you want in the material world, still you're not going to be happy. And because the material world belongs to God, the reason you're not happy is because it belongs to God. So only if God's happy can you be happy. So when you perform activities in the world that God likes, then you'll be happy. Because we're taking that I am the source of my happiness, or my dealings are the source of my happiness. God's the source of my happiness. I'm connected to the material world. Material world is God's. Right? I want to be happy by dealing with the material world. But God is only happy when but I being part and parcel of God, then I can't be happy unless God's happy. So unless my dealing with material energy pleases God, I won't be happy. You understand? There's myself, there's material energy, there's God. So unless I'm dealing with the material energy in relationship to God, I will not be happy, because God is the source of happiness, not the material energy. So if you understand that, you wouldn't be bewildered by this. They can say all this all you want. Oh, you're restricting yourself. How are you restricting yourself? Then they're saying they're restricting you to that you're not restricting yourself. That's still a restriction. You can only be happy if you don't restrict yourself. But you're restricting yourself to not restricting yourself. You know what I'm saying? But the point is, if you're not restricting, means you could follow restrictions. You understand? You're free to follow restrictions. But they're saying you're not free to follow restrictions. You have to not follow them. That's a restriction. So the thing is they're not smart enough to understand their own fallacies. So if this is what we're trying to teach, then they just go, this person can't do anything for me, and then they'll go talk to some other devotees. Right? Does that make sense? So this is an example where the sentiment is good and all that, but then when you see something different that, you know, sounds good, right? It sounds good because emotionally it sounds good, but logically it doesn't make sense. So then you may change what you do. So here we're talking about one person not understanding, then their influence, a whole yatra was lost. And then I know of, there's a few temples like this. Same thing. Is that they go to these outside professionals. Outside professionals have their own philosophy. And then by just convincing the devotee of that, then the devotee gets distracted. And much of the time, if they're in a more prominent position, they distract everyone else. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's going on. These are obvious examples where people were really following and then not following. Now it's harder to see the examples where the logic, you know, that you know, talking about just being practical in mind. What does practical mean? Practical means you're getting the result. So what result are you getting? You know what I'm saying? So this kind of logic they don't apply. So that's why logic is important. Does that make sense? Because feelings are why we do things, and feelings are what you're trying to get, the experience. But if you're not, you can get experience anywhere. You could get experience by going, you know, out behind the gutter building and, you know, sifting through the garbage there and finding something to eat. You know, or, you know, set up the garbage, you know, for a place to, you know, live. You know, rats live there, they're happy. You know what I'm saying? So anything can happen. You know, but it's a matter of what result do you want? Right? So does that make sense? So a human being is able to understand God consciousness. Human being doesn't live in the garbage can. Right? Because the element of cleanliness and purity is important to keep the mind in the mode of goodness, so that one will be able to deal in the moment properly in a Krishna conscious way. Does this make sense? Yeah, so that's the idea. Okay? Otherwise, then, people will come up. So, here the subject matter of Gita, then there's 5 points. Ishvara is God. Jiva, the living entity. Prakriti means the material energy. Same time as prakriti can also mean the spiritual world. Right? In other words, if we're dealing with our attachments and that, and we're dealing with the negative side, then we're dealing with the material world. We're dealing with the positive side, cultivating Krishna consciousness. then that means the spiritual world. Right? But prakriti can mean both. So specifically, it'll mean the material energy. Right? That's what we're analyzing. But we're analyzing in comparison to the spiritual world. Right? Kala means time. Karma means the results of our fruit of work. Right? Okay? So that is the subject matter of Gita. It's not something else. So then Ishwar, Krishna, is the controller of everything. Right? You have to know that. Why is it mentioned as controller? It's because we want to be the controller. So you have to figure out, no, Krishna is the controller. Jiva, the living entity, is only a subordinate controller. Controller, okay, so we got that. Okay, I'll relax. As long as I'm controller. But subordinate controller, okay, we have to. It's also prakriti, right? Because sometimes it's just, you talk about God and his energies. Then you want, well, what about Jiva and the material energy? That's only if you're talking about material consciousness. Then you have to separate. But otherwise, it's God and his energies. It's just two things. Right? But within that, the energy means the spiritual world, the jivas and the material. And is the jivas controlled by Krishna. Right? So Krishna is the controller. We're also a controller, the subordinate controller. Right? So he is the supreme controller. So we control, but we're also controlled by him. Then prakriti, material nature, constituted of three qualities, sattva, rajas, and tamas. Right? Because sattva, rajas, and tamas, that will be the manifestation of the three aspects of Krishna's energy. It means that Krishna's sloop shakti, then when applied on the spiritual platform, then you get Satchitananda. When applied on the material platform, then you get tamas, rajas, and sattva. Does it make sense? But otherwise, for Krishna, you don't make that distinction. Right? Krishna doesn't make this distinction. Right? It's just all he's interacting with his devotees. So you don't distinguish between these. So there it's because one is perfectly in line with the mood of relationship. Right? One is serving the spiritual master. He's serving his spiritual master. Like this, it goes back to Rupa Goswami, who's serving Radha and Krishna. Right? Then it works very nicely. Because from the mood here, we don't have to analyze it according to these different breakdowns of Satchitananda or here of Tamas Rajas and Sattva Guna. Right? Because here we're doing that to get ourselves removed from material attachment and somehow or other cultivate that spiritual. Does this make sense? Yeah? So this is what we're trying to do. So, in that way then, it, how do you say? Yeah. So there's no distinction, but for philosophy we make distinction, because that way we can understand. And we understand how Krishna is God and what ways he's God, and how we're not God. Right? But otherwise, as far as relationship goes, then that's not brought out so much. Then it's more the devotion and all that. So if we're getting out of the material world, then you bring out the three modes of nature. Right? Does that make sense? Kala, eternal time, the energy of Krishna. And karma, by a combination of the three modes under the control and purview of eternal time, there are activities. So in other words, when you combine the three modes of nature and time, you get karma. Does this make sense? So time is not the problem. Time is movement. So activity is not the problem. The problem is activity under the modes. So if activity is not under the modes of nature, there's no karma. Right? It means what you're doing, if you're doing, you're performing an activity to please Krishna, that's not under the modes of nature. Right? So the result you'll get will be spiritual. Right? So it's not karma. But if you perform the same activity under the modes of nature, you know, you're doing for yourself, then it will produce karma. So that's the point. Is it's not the stopping of activities. That's the Mayavadi's problem. I'm performing activities, therefore I'm getting karma. And from karma I'm suffering. So if I give up activities that will stop karma, that will stop my suffering. Right? So this is their logic, right? They're trying to connect that the spiritual means no suffering, right? And material is suffering. But material means I'm performing activities, right? So because of the activities connected to the, how you say, that means the material nature and the activities are connected. My suffering is connected to activities. So therefore, if I give up activities, then I will be happy. So if I give up the activities, I'm performing activities, I give them up, then there'll be no problem. But the problem is that the jiva can't give up activity. And the real problem is not that one's suffering the material world because of activity, it's because the activity is wrong. Not that the activity you're doing is technically wrong. You know, you're cooking, it's not technically wrong, it's a good recipe, you're cooking it properly. But what's wrong is that it's God's creation. You're not cooking it to please God. Does this make sense? So we see where the logic is wrong for the Mayavadis? Right? So we've shown where the logic's wrong with these modern, you know, philosophers and psychiatrists, where the logic's wrong, that this is what the advantage of logic is. Because we'll just say, they said this and they said that, but the point is they're saying A equals B equals C, therefore A and C are equal. Right? But it's not. Right? Because the problem is you're suffering because you're performing the activity not in line with God's law. Because the law is to please God, not just to do it nicely. In other words, you follow God's law, but not to please God, that's called piety. You don't follow God's law, then it's called impiety. So they only know piety and impiety. So impious, obviously everybody will understand that gives you trouble. But piety, then those who are intelligent understand even that gives you trouble. You're so religious, everything's so perfect for, but still you'll have trouble. Right? You do everything right, you know, you're getting all the money you need, everything, everyone's dealing with you nice, there's no social problems, you have all the facility you need, everything's wonderful, a relationship with your family and friends, everything's great. Sounds okay, right? Now, the problem is, but at some point, even everything's perfect, somebody's going to die. Right? Now, if you die, then you don't have to worry about anyone else's anxiety. But the point is you're dead. Right? But if someone else dies, then you're left there to be in anxiety about that. So the point is somebody's going to die. Right? It's just the way it works. Does that make sense? So it's still not enough. So those who are not so intelligent, they look at just the immediate. Those who are intelligent look at the long term. So the not so intelligent are called the karmis. The more intelligent are called the jnanis. But they're still not intelligent enough because they think by giving up activity, I will stop karma. That will stop my anxiety. No, the point is why anxiety is theirs because it's not in connection with God. That's all. It's not the activity. It's not the situation. It's that the activity and situation, the identity, is not in connection with God. You understand? So therefore, if you give up the modes of nature and perform the activity based on spiritual purposes, then it will take you back to Godhead. So the Mayavadis, no matter how smart they are, their logic is wrong. Because they're taking that my anxiety is coming from performing activities. Right? Karma comes, okay, karma is obvious. Okay, karma, they'll all say, yes, that's the point of either happiness or distress. And so ultimately all karma is distress. Right? But they'll say that's because of activity. Right? So they don't fully understand activity. They don't understand activity, which means time, done under the modes, that's creating karma. They don't understand you can perform activity not under the modes, and that will free you from that. Yes?
In that case, their logic is correct, but their premise is wrong? Like their understanding?
No, because they're taking activity, their definition of activity is wrong, so therefore their definition of giving up activity, that will therefore create spiritual happiness, that's not connected. In other words, their example is fallacious. means these are details of logic. You know, in other words, in which way is your connecting A, B, and C wrong? That's the science of Jnana.
But also, if somebody sourced them properly in the Vedas, then no matter how good their logic would be, they won't.
Yeah, so that's the point. But the point is that Prabhupada's saying, if you have one, if you're off by a slightest degree, after a long distance, it'll be very distant. So what the Mayavadis say and what we say as far as getting out of the material world, that we say is the same. We also say give up material activities. But their giving up material activities means do no activities. Right? Or, if you're going to do, you do activities without desire for result. We'll also say the same thing. That will liberate you. Yes, it will. But they don't understand is that they're saying liberation, that will make you happy. We're saying no, it won't. So they can't understand is that stopping activity, because liberation, their definition is no activity. Our definition of liberation is now it's spiritual activity. So their definitions are wrong. So that's also one of the problems of logic, yes.
What to do?
You're
trying to prove all this to someone or to my mom. I see that this someone, let's say, said that small doesn't necessarily mean fire. Like, why so little doesn't have faith?
No, but smoke always... If you have smoke, there always has to be fire. But you can't have fire without smoke.
Sorry for this example. Okay, and I doesn't believe in soul is eternal. Because proving this, we use some axioms. Yes, like soul is eternal.
Yes.
Krishna is God. And someone who doesn't believe, who doesn't have this spirit about God, he cannot accept this knowledge. And most people are trying to prove something to these persons.
Kind of. I'm doing this for devotees. The karmis are actually easy.
Karmis
are easier, yeah. Devotees are harder. You know what I'm saying? Because they're only having to get faith to accept it. That's the first step. So that means going from shraddha, you know, it means from nothing to shraddha. And then, you know, take up the associate. We're talking about going from shraddha up to prema. So it's a bigger thing. So that's why I'm giving these examples here. The point is why do they want their happiness to last? Right? Why, when they're dealing in the romantic environment, do they talk about forever? You know what I'm saying? Because if it means the body is temporary. That's obvious. Everything around you is temporary. So why does every living entity think in terms of eternal? That's because the soul is eternal. Why does the soul always, whatever you do, you're looking for happiness. Even if you think by making yourself miserable and being grumpy, that will make you happy. Then, you know, people do it. But the point is happiness. Right? Why do people want to know? No one wants to be in ignorance. Why do they want to know? Right? You even have television shows. It's all just about knowledge. You know. You read out something. You know, what is the, you know, some mathematical crazy thing, and then whoever can give the answer gets a prize. You know, because it's all so knowledge is interesting. Happiness is interesting. Getting results. So people, it says because this is the nature of the soul. So Satchidananda, this is the nature of the soul. So it's just obvious. Every living entity is looking for exactly the same things. Right? But in illusion, you know, they don't see, they're going to die. So that's the problem. Okay. Does that make sense? So these basic points, you know, generally devotees, that, but their logic sometimes doesn't carry through. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't make sense? Devotee accepts that I, you know, everything's about Krishna. But if you took right now, we just got up and walked over to the grihastha area and went door to door, and we go into their house and then see how their house is set up, we could start asking questions: why they're living this way, what do they do with this, what's its purpose? And you might not find that a whole lot of things are connected to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? They go to the temple program, they chant their japa, you know, like that. Generally, pictures on the wall are, you know, how you say, you know, about Krishna. It's not, you know, like a Metallica concert or, you know, something like that, you know. So like that, it's Krishna conscious. But the lifestyle in the house, is it? You know, you walk in, you know, how do they live? You know, how is it? You know what I'm saying? Here it'd be less of a problem. But if you went to the west and went to someone's house, you know, why do they have a wall-to-wall carpet? What's the purpose? You know? I'm just asking. Anybody, what's the purpose of a wall-to-wall carpet? Why would you need a wall-to-wall carpet? Why? Devotees have it. So many devotees have it. Why? Do you walk this far away from the wall? Do you ever walk this far away from the wall? What's the closest you walk to a wall? You know what I'm saying? So that means you don't actually have to have the carpet go up to the wall. So it could be smaller, so that you could roll it up. You know, you could clean it, you know, like that. You know, beat it, wipe the floor. You could do all that, but no, wall-to-wall carpet is that, but you can't clean it. So why is that a superior lifestyle? Why is that considered to be an optimum lifestyle in the West? It's nice, but do you really need it? So Vedic system, they had rugs, right? There were rugs in India before they had them in Europe, let me tell you. Right? You know, they call them Persian rugs. How old is Persia? Since when was the last time Iran was called Persia? Right? Okay. And then the Persian rugs came from over here. The concepts came from here. You know, so therefore, they've always had rugs here. Does it make sense? So, why would the devotee have that when you can't clean? And not only that, is it wool? Okay, if it was wool, then I can understand to some degree, because at least then it's pure, though it gets a lot of dust and all that, but is it good to have so much dust? But even if we forget the dust, is it pure? But no, the most likely, unless they're very wealthy, it is synthetic. That means it's always dirty, so they can never be clean in their house, but isn't devotees clean? Sound insulation for kirtans. You can still put down rugs. And that's a long shot. How many devotees you know of that's why they have rugs? Yeah. So, in the Köln temple in Germany, the whole kirtan room is completely soundproof. You know, it cost them 200,000 Deutschmarks at the time. But there is no rug on the floor. Amazing. You can soundproof without a wall. So what he's saying is you know, whether they have a carpet, they can't explain it. They can't explain why they have what they have in their house. So my point is how is it all connected to Krishna? Because Krishna in the second canto is saying, all times, all places, all circumstances, you should be trying to see God from the littlest thing like this, your rug, up to, you know, his pastime with his devotees in Vrindavan. You understand? So that's what I'm saying. That's harder than to just convince somebody that they're not the body. That's more easy. But to convince somebody how in every aspect of their life to connect it to Krishna, that's more difficult. That's why Krishna says, preaching to the devotees is more important than preaching to the karmis. We preach to the karmis, otherwise where do you get the devotees to preach to? Right? So we preach to the karmis and think, that's it. No, you're supposed to, after preaching, then you're supposed to preach to them now that they've become devotees. Right? It's just like, you go to the market, why? Because then you buy vegetables. Why? Because then you can cook them. Why? So then you can eat. So we distribute books so that will make devotees, so that you can train devotees so they go back to God. But some people think distributing the books, that's enough, finish. Some others think, make the devotee, that's it, finish. No, but it's got to come to training the devotees. Therefore, Prabhupada gave all these courses. Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti, he gave all these courses to train the devotees. How many temples do you know that studying these courses are standard and everyone in the temple should be studying them? How many temples do you know? Right? One, two, maybe three. You understand? you say Belgium, but no, it's a education center. It was a temple that didn't teach these things, and then they made it into an education center. Right? Now it teaches these things. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty. Is that this fullness of the philosophy is not seen. Okay, then, so one is the subject matter. One is, so A, here we have Ishvara, Jiva, Prakriti, Kala, and Karma. Right? So that's the first point, that this is the subject matter. Second is material nature is eternal and real. Right? Because it's always here, always will be here, and it is real. It means you are leaning on an actual real piece of material energy. Like that. Then no, you cannot take home as a souvenir.
Wow, a real piece.
Right? Because the Mayavadis will say it's not real. It doesn't exist. Right? This is a material concept. Now, if material energy doesn't exist, then their problem is then material life doesn't exist. Then activities don't exist. The soul doesn't exist. So when the soul comes under illusion, but they can't explain where this illusion comes from, then you have the concept of the individual soul. And so when the individual soul gets rid of the concept of the material, since the soul concept of the soul has been generated by the material energy, by the concept of it, when you get rid of the concept of material energy, you get rid of the soul. Does it make sense? It doesn't make sense, but this is what the Mayavadis say. You understand? This is why it's said it's non-different from Buddhism. Just the form is different. Buddhists don't accept the Vedic literatures, the Mayavadis do. That's the only difference. So therefore, the Mayavadis follow a Vedic lifestyle. They're in the Vedic system, so that's superior to Buddhism, which doesn't. But the Buddhists will say there's just void, and then from this void, this illusion comes applied, and so then the jiva thinks he's separate from the void. He thinks he exists, but is generated from the material energy. Right? And then the gross materialist, he'll say life comes from matter. You understand? So there's no difference in the philosophy, technically, between the materialists and the so-called, you know, impersonalists and spiritualists. Because all of them think the soul has come from material energy. Nobody understands souls come from God. Does this make sense? That's why there's a difference in the impersonalist. The impersonalist is just all Brahman, so you become absorbed in Brahman. There's not so much of a point of whether you become Brahman or not. You already are Brahman. So Mayavadi is saying you become Brahman. Mayavadi is saying you're already Brahman. Everything's Brahman. It's just a matter of whether you understand it or not. So they're not offensive, because the soul doesn't disappear. You know, God can have a form, and that doesn't matter to them. It's of no interest. So there's a difference. So in analyzing, there's a difference between these. So it means you can deal with the Mayavadis, you can deal with the materialists. They're all saying the same thing. They're just starting from different sides. You know, because it's all material consciousness, all one thing, right? Huh? You ask a Christian, what's the soul? What answer are you going to get?
The body.
The body, right? Jews say the same. Yeah. So it's about. So that means it's dead. It's material energy. So it's just that. The impersonalists are a little bit more subtle, that they accept that there's the concept of I. So they don't worry about the body. But that's basically the only difference. Otherwise, they're all impersonalists. If you ask, you know, who's God, you know, ultimately they'll end up with no form, no nothing. So it still ends up, they're all, you know, in other words, that consciousness is coming from the material energy, and that God is you know, formless, that's the basic standard of all mundane consciousness. No matter what philosophy, it'll all come back to these points. Now, which they bring out more, what's the process to get there, that'll make the difference. But otherwise, same thing. So that's why the material nature is eternal and real. That's why it's important. The Bhagavatam opens, in the first verse, it says it's real. Right? But the concept of that it's not connected to God, that's the illusion. Because you have to be able to tell what's real and what's not. So we'll just say, you know, material energy, that's Maya. No, material energy is not Maya. Material energy is material energy. You don't see material energy in connection with Krishna. That's Maya. Right? That's the point. So devotees, with your point, so much of the time, they'll just say, you know, you ask, like, let's say, some of the ladies in the temple, or some of the men, why don't they dress properly? Dress properly means wear a nice sari, have some color in it. And oh, that's Maya. But why is it Maya? Maya is it's not connected to Krishna. So what's their reason for not wearing it? Oh, it's attachment. So what's the problem with attachment? So for them, detachment stands on its own as a good quality. But for us, detachment has no value if it's not connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? So their wearing like that is actually based on impersonal philosophy, not based on our philosophy. But they won't know it. So this is what I'm meaning, is that the devotees just find their points here. You know? Or others, and they dress up nicely, they go to the temple, and that's where all the matchmaking happens. So this is also another thing, why they do, you know, we're just being natural. Natural what? You're in front of the deities, you're in front of the, you know, the Vaishnavas. So how is that natural? Natural for what? Dogs, yes. But, you know, do you want to become a dog or do you want to be a human? Do you want to go back to God? So humans do like this in the temple, dogs don't. Right? Dogs are outside and dogs come to the temple, they'll do the same thing. You know, they'll sniff around and, you know, decide which vertical objects belong to them. And, you know, stuff like this. So you understand? So they're not actually understanding the philosophy, who they are, who God is, what their relationship is. And we'll say, oh, this is all fundamental philosophy, but we can see it goes a lot farther. If I say, material energy is eternal and real, you go, yeah, we heard that. You know, let's get into some real. No, this is there. This is Vedanta. You know? And a lot of trouble is taken to establish that. But we'll take it for granted. Okay, and then on that, the manifestation of the material world is also real, but it's temporary. Right? Means the material energy is eternal. It's real, it's eternal. But its manifestation, where we can see it in all this form, that's temporary. It'll be manifest, then it'll be dissolved. And manifest and dissolved. But the material energy is always there in the form of pradhan. But it will actually be manifest, then that is then when creation is there, it's there, and when dissolution. Like that. But what is manifest is real. You take the pradhan, all the elements put together, then creation means you simply separate them. So it's real. And then at some point it all goes back together. So you thought, going to the market, buying the rice, the dal, the potatoes, and all the spices, that was the real thing. No, that's the temporary thing. The kichri, that's the real thing. We'll get purged together. Okay, so we'll end here today. Okay. Did you hear? And
does this happen pretty much every day?
Every day, okay, Monday, Wednesday, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. Right? Wednesday, no class, Saturday, Sunday, no class. That's what I'm saying. You have plenty of time to be able to read what it is. So now, it means this introduction should be read. right? Because we're just going through the subject, I mean, you know, that analyzation and that. And so, basically speaking, you want to go through, you want to get credit. I mean, in other words, you can come and sit, nice, but if you want to get credit for it, and actually, you know, after four and a half months to get the Bhakti Shastri degree, then you'll need to read the material, write the essays. So if you want that, you know, that then you speak to, who's going to organize that? You. Okay, so Shanti and Pandava Bandava, like that Pandava Bandava is developing the course and all that. I think Shanti is, you know, helping with the, how you say, the adult educational program. Yeah, correspondence and that. And him and his wife are working on the Bhagavatam elements. So these two in contact. But you should work that out before the weekend. Yeah.
This will be ISKCON certified by the Shastri.
ISKCON certified. What do you mean by ISKCON certified?
I know that there are like some official courses which give Bhakti Shastri.
Did you see that book that came along? You know, just when you're here and that book came?
Yeah.
That book was published in 1986. So you name me any Bhakti Shastri course going on now that goes back that far. So we've been running Bhakti Shastri courses. That was when it was published, so we were running them since 84. So this is our Bhakti Shastri. Anybody else likes it or not? Personally, I couldn't care less. Because then, personally, I'll say they're just bureaucrats, they're not philosophers. Because philosophers understand if it's solid philosophy, it's good. If they want to get into their little bureaucratic, you know, things. Sad, but I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Same. Yeah. 7:15, 7:20, like that. Because the kids' class starts at 7, it ends at 7:10. You know, so if I don't go and everyone's here, we'll start early. Otherwise, 7:20 is the latest we'll start. So in other words, it's the same amount of time that we would get for two periods. It just starts a little later and there's no gap in between. So if that works for everyone, fine. If everyone's falling asleep, needs a gap, then we'll put in, you know, 10-minute gap. So it works. So ISKCON recognized or not, we're not worried about it. This is the Bhaktivedanta Academy stuff, and we've been running them longer than anybody else has. I mean anybody else, including Vrindavan, including Mayapur. We've been doing it before. So this is not a problem for us. Like this stuff, have you ever heard this before? This level of analyzation of the Gita, the introduction. We're not in the Gita, this is introduction. So this stuff that you're reading here, this was written in the 80s. So this is what we do. You know, we don't advertise, that's why no one knows. So it's up to you. You know the philosophy, it works. You don't know the philosophy, who cares? You have a degree, don't have a degree, it doesn't matter to us. Like that. So previously, ours was authorized. Now, if they don't accept it, I couldn't care less about bureaucrats. We're Brahmins, we deal with Brahmins. Bureaucrats are Shudras. And that's just facts. So, it's up to you. You want to spend your time for the next 4.5 months? You're welcome. And if you think you'll be wasting your time, then there are other alternatives. You have the VTE course over here. Vrindavan doesn't use the VTE course. They don't figure it's deep enough. They run a separate course that's more based on what Burijan Prabhu teaches. And Narayani Mataji is, you know, one of the ones that was involved, but she's more specifically involved in the Bhagavatam study, like that. So generally others from these other courses have come to us for direction, you know, so you work it out how it stands. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Bhakti Vrinda Ki, Sanitai Gaur.